Welcome to Industry Preview, a special podcast series focused on the year ahead in marketing and technology. Since we can't do a live industry preview event in Q1, as we normally would, we have transformed the franchise into a unique audio experience. Please follow along as we bring you interviews with CMOs, CEOs, and other key leaders who will determine the course of this industry in the coming 12 months. Industry Preview is sponsored by IBM Watson Advertising. IBM Watson Advertising brings AI at scale to the advertising industry through a suite of cookie and identifier-free solutions that help brands reach consumers in privacy-forward ways.
I'm Allison Schiff, one of the editors with AdExchanger, and I have David Jones with me, the CEO and founder of You and Mr. Jones. We're here to talk about the future, not just 2021, but also beyond, and with an eye on AI, because artificial intelligence has the potential to transform the future of business and marketing, let alone the world, but it's still not well understood. I mean, certainly not by me. And to say that it's early innings, I think, is an understatement, but not an excuse not to talk about the potential and also the implications. You and Mr. Jones likes to place calculated bets. It's made strategic investments in a lot of companies since 2015, when it was founded, with the idea of creating a new category called brand tech, centered on the notion that businesses can do better marketing more quickly and cheaper using technology. You and Mr. Jones was the first external investor in Niantic, for example, after Niantic was spun off from Google and before Pokemon Go launched. And over the years, it's put money into Pinterest, Beeswax, Giftcat, the media company Mike, AR company Zapper, Amino, VidMob, an IoT platform for consumer product brands called Everything, and also the AI Foundation, which is an AI company that helps develop technology, products, and experiences to tap into the power of what it calls, quote-unquote, decentralized, trusted, personal AI. So we'll talk about what that means. But first, David, good to have you here.
It's good to be here. Virtually, of course.
Of course. So to start out, lay out the You and Mr. Jones investment thesis for me, like what you're looking for in a company. And what about a startup or an opportunity says to you, like, this is something we want to invest in. And right now you are looking for targets because You and Mr. Jones just closed a $260 million Series B round, and you're planning on making some acquisitions and also more strategic investments.
No, exactly. So I think, you know, at a big picture level, our goal is to be the global leader in enterprise level tech marketing solutions. What we call brand tech, you know, basically the mobile phone created a tectonic disruption in the world of marketing and made the job of CMOs very complicated. And our goal is to help make that simple. And there are sort of two parts to the business. On the one side, we acquire majority stakes of promising companies and technologies. We integrate them into our platform, and then we kind of develop and scale and grow them. And then on the other side, we make investments in technology and technology companies, strategic investments in technologies that we think are really interesting for our brand partners. And we've done 34 of those in 22 companies over the last 5 years. And you mentioned a few of the better known ones. And I think, you know, when it comes to both sides, there's probably four key questions that we are, you know, asking ourselves. The first one is it a great company in a vertical we want to play in? Secondly, you know, do we like the people? Is there a strong cultural fit between them and us? Thirdly, you know, does the deal make financial sense? And that doesn't mean cheap. I mean, you know, the majority of the companies that we're making strategic minority investments in are loss-making companies on day one, but often they very quickly become extremely profitable companies. And finally, and most importantly, do we think this is a company that our brand partners will get excited by?
Mm-hmm. Well, one company that I mentioned, the AI Foundation, you've invested in them multiple times, I believe. And I think that that speaks to your interest in artificial intelligence and the potential there. But I want to get into the topic of AI, but I also want to sort of set the stage. So when the term AI gets tossed around today, and I have a lot of vendors, you know, sending me pitches, write this story about my AI technology, and then you dust it off and I'm not a PhD, but it doesn't seem like AI to me. But what do you think people mainly mean when they say AI? Because it kind of feels like they mean everything from dynamic creative optimization and smart chatbots to like self-driving cars, and then just a short hop, skip, and a jump to the takeover of all humanity.
Yeah. So look, I think you nail one of the problems, which is both AI is an enormous space. AI means lots of different things to different people. And as with many buzzwords, you know, you have lots of people who suddenly think that if they say that what they're doing is AI, they become more valuable or more interesting. I mean, at its core, and these are sort of my layman definitions, so not necessarily the great ones to kind of copy and repeat, but I think the big difference is between algorithms and AI. And so, you know, an algorithm is basically a process or set of rules to be followed. And I think what often happens in, you know, marketing advertising is people, you know, talk about algorithms as if they are actually AI. Whereas I think, you know, AI basically refers to the simulation of human intelligence in computers and machines. And I think the way I kind of, view it is that, you know, algorithms aren't intelligent and don't develop. You know, it does the same thing each time. It can do it at vast scale. But what AI does is it's actually dynamic. It changes and evolves. And, you know, the computer simulates human intelligence and its ability to evolve and learn, hence where, you know, machine learning comes from. So I would always view it like that, you know, an algorithm is static, artificial intelligence grows and learns and develops.
Well, then what do you see as the true potential for AI technology in marketing and also for the customer experience? And one way that you've described it to me in the past is that there's a sort of spectrum of AI where, you know, you have some of the more practical things like for media planning or DCO beyond just algorithms, and then the more futuristic stuff. So with that spectrum in the background, you know, what are some of the actual, you know, things that are coming soon that, you know, it might be hard to envision that our life ever didn't include these things? And then also looking a little bit further out, what are some of the things that, you know, we wouldn't be able to really necessarily envision as part of our daily lives, but, you know, they might be pretty soon, actually, you know, in maybe a couple of years, 3 years.
Yes. And look, I think what, you know, what's exciting about when you look but the future is if you kind of just look to the past first, and I mean the near past. So, you know, we forget just how many things have changed in the last decade. So, you know, Instagram was born in 2010. Okay, we're in 2021. So it's 11 years, not exactly 10 years. But like Instagram, which, you know, most people now can't remember ever living without, was born in 2020. Like Alexa from Amazon came along in, you know, 2014. The iPhone, which has changed the world beyond all recognition, only came out in 2008, towards the end of the previous decade. And I think when you look at that context and you kind of go, what do the next 10 years have in store for us? I think it's unbelievably exciting. Now, you then have to split it into two, which is like, what are the tangible, concrete, applicable uses now? And if I'm a marketer in 2021, and where might this be going in, you know, 2025 and beyond? And so if you look at it through that lens, I mean, we're investors in a terrific company called Elsie. A lot of people are using AI to create content. What Elsie to do media buying. What Elsie do is they use AI to do media planning, and they're making some just really phenomenal inroads into that. If you look at, you know, Jivox, where again we're an early investor in Jivox, they're using AI to drive DCO and to be able to create literally, you know, millions of versions of content in real time, tied into, you know, numerous different data points. And I think, you know, they're really hitting their stride in the last 12 months and doing amazingly. And for some of their clients, you know, they literally have 1.2 million assets in market at any given time. You know, we're investors in a company called Automat who use AI to build e-commerce chatbots. So the ability for, you know, the chatbot to take over and have the conversation and help guide people through the sales funnel. So I think you've got a number of very practical uses already where you have very tangible use cases and, you know, great case studies and success stories. And then at the other end of the spectrum, you have like the very visionary futuristic side of AI, and AI Foundation is a great example of that. So what, you know, what they can do is they can build a mind twin. So they can build a version of you that looks like you, sounds like you, and you can train it to have conversations like you would have, to tell your stories, to explain your company, and you, you know, control at all time the data and the ability to turn it on or off. And I think when you look at a company like that, and, you know, there's a great example, they have built the mind twin for Deepak Chopra, and there's a great example of him on Jimmy Fallon taking everyone through a guided meditation. But when you look at a technology like that, and you kind of go, look, we all have the ability to create a digital twin of ourselves. And you can use that for, you know, very futuristic things. So for example, we all have the potential to virtually live forever. So I can train my mind twin to know all my jokes, my stories, the advice I give my kids, so that 50, 60, 70 years from now, if I'm not still around, they can have those conversations. You know, a completely banal or boring, the other side of it is, you know, customer service, the ability to have customer service that instantly recognizes you. It's a human interface, can answer all your questions and solve your problems rather than sitting on hold for 20 minutes and everything in between. But, I think we're going to see some incredibly interesting developments in that space. Clearly, with it, there are issues. You know, we're all very familiar with not just issues around data privacy, but issues around deep fakes. And one of the other things we like about the AI Foundation is they have a product called Reality Defender that is all about spotting deep fakes and ensuring that the technology is used in the right way.
That seems like a very important tool, particularly now, because the way I understand Reality Defender, I mean, it's a mixture of AI and human analysis, but it's rooting out fake content, deep fakes, misinformation. And misinformation is a massive topic right now. And I think we're just on the precipice of understanding like all of the truly negative potential of something like a deep fake. It's getting pretty difficult.
Yeah, I mean, I would make two observations, though. The first one is, last time I looked, it's humans who are creating a lot more problems with misinformation and fakes than it is any kind of technology. But I think the second thing, you know, with every technology, when it first comes along, it's really scary. So if you think about what's the kind of the analog version of what we're talking about, it's Photoshop. You know, when Photoshop came along, you had the ability to suddenly put three people in a photo who had never been in that photo. And you could freak out and go, oh my God, you know, where will this lead us to, you know, all the fake photos that people can create? And, you know, in reality, we stopped having conversations about people using Photoshop to create fake things a long time ago. I think the other thing is, because of everything that we've just been through in the last, you know, particularly 18 months, around technology's role in changing elections, around the negative impact of it, I think the, you know, companies coming along now, you know, have their eyes wide open to that. And I would say that, you know, the challenge and complexity for all of the big platforms that have come along to date is, you know, by the time they realized that there was a negative impact of their technology, they were playing catch up trying to fix it. So whether it was, you know, Twitter with the incredibly aggressive behavior going on their platform, YouTube with ISIS videos, Facebook with the election. And I think the good thing, you know, about understanding all of those journeys is that a company like AI Foundation's start point can be, how do we ensure that people don't do the wrong thing with our technology from day one?
And it's a point well taken about, you know, people doing things, because as you were talking about Photoshop, my mind just went back to Russian history for a hot second. You know, there are these like famous before and after photos, Stalin walking down a riverbank or something with a couple of colleagues, pre-purge and post-purge. And what's the difference between the photos? You know, it's the same picture, but just one person isn't there anymore. It was possible to manipulate reality, just not really very easily and at scale. And so that is it's a human problem. It's been a human problem for a long time.
Look, people have misused the powerful technology of the day forever. You know, I mean, just look at how states and dictators, you know, controlled their countries using television. And I think we would be naive to think that there will ever be a day when bad people don't try and do evil things with technology. But I think the other thing that we've always seen is that, you know, you look back 10 years and you might think that you are, you know, now at the cutting edge of tech. It can never get any bigger or more powerful or faster. And we will look back 10 years from now and go, wow, do you remember back in 2021 when it was all so simple? You know, I think when I was growing up, my parents thought that television would be the ruin of me and the world, and now no one watches it anymore.
Right. Well, and it's a good point too, you know, just about how quickly people are able to weave something new into their lives. You know, you brought up the mind twin of Deepak Chopra, and you shared that video clip with me actually before this interview of, you know, Deepak Chopra being interviewed by Jimmy Fallon, and they bring out his mind twin on a screen. And, you know, Jimmy's like, you know, he does his silly little laugh and he interviews the mind twin, and the audience sort of laughs, and the mind twin, you know, guides the audience in meditation. And oh, isn't that interesting? It's like Deepak, but it's not. But the implications for, you know, customer service are clear. You know, you made that point to me before. And, you know, the people sitting in the audience sort of tittering and thinking, oh, this is so weird and kind of gimmicky and kind of funny, will probably be trying to return a pair of shoes to a mind twin, I don't know, in like a year or two or three.
No, exactly. And I also think, you know, if you are, a Deepak Chopra, you can have a billion individual conversations that you don't need to be part of, but that can actually tap into all of your knowledge and expertise and learnings. So I think the practical applications of this can be huge. I mean, just look, you know, even in my day job, you know, we probably look at 20 different companies a week. One whole part of that is me telling the story of the company, whilst, you know, my partners and colleagues who've heard it for the 15,000th time sit looking on board. You know, in the future, someone will be able to have that entire conversation with my mind twin and get everything they need to get out of it and ask all of the questions, you know. But I think there's much more serious applications of it as well around areas like mental health. You know, and the ability to provide support and help for people. I mean, you've had some interesting examples out there around COVID of people starting to use the kind of the equivalent of mind twins to have conversations about COVID and get basic information. So I think, you know, we're clearly at the very, very start of something. And that quote that a number of people have said, which is, you know, we always dramatically overestimate the change we're going to see in a year and dramatically underestimate 10 years is, you know, extremely true and pertinent for AI. But I think you start to see the technology and its capabilities, and obviously having been, you know, sitting on the board and having seen the journey, it's pretty remarkable what they can do. And you just look at the potential of that. And it's no different. You know, we were early investors in Niantic, as you said, and, you know, I remember we were all kind of looking at at Pokemon Go and thinking how interesting it was. And, you know, it launched and it was the fastest technology in history to have 50 million users. You know, and within no time at all, 1 billion people were running around catching Pokemon, and the world had gone from having no idea what AR was to everyone knowing what AR was. And I think the speed with which things now, you know, go from kind of potential to massive business has just compressed so much. And so maybe that quote will be, you know, we dramatically overestimate the change in a year and dramatically underestimate 3 years or 5 years.
Mm-hmm. Well, I have a practical question. So let's say someone's mind twin closes a deal. Like, who gets the bonus? Who gets credit for that?
It's got to be the mind twin. Got to be the mind twin. And it has to be virtual currency. But no, look, I think by then we'll all be on Bitcoin and it will all be traceable and,
much easier. So we've been having, a conversation that really ranges and is looking quite far into the future. But I'm a marketer today. So I want to walk into a meeting and I want to be smart, but I also don't want to, you know, go goolally, you know, and get blinded by shiny objects. So what do I need to know as a marketer today and then into 2021 and then maybe a bit further out too, just about AI and when, you know, when it's really going to, you know, hit a certain stride that impacts my day to day, like where it's going. What do I need to know as a marketer about how it'll affect my job and if it'll make my job more complicated or easier or just different?
So the first thing is any technology and the use of any technology is only to make your job easier. So any technology that doesn't make your job easier, you should completely avoid. Secondly, I think trying to see through the hype, I've always said that ad agencies are very good at press releases and not good at technology and execution. And tech companies are very good at technology and execution and not good at press releases. But, you know, you have enormous numbers of people putting out nonsense press releases about AI. And so there's an enormous amount of noise. So the third thing, I would just focus on really concrete, tangible examples of AI being used to, you know, help create vast amounts of individualized content at scale, and not the theory of that. So if someone says to you, in theory, we will be able to, it's no, I want to see now, you know, which client do you have 1.2 million assets up at currently globally, all different, individualized, that you have been able to deliver through AI? And if they can show you that, then that's a really interesting conversation to have. You know, not the theory of in the future, you will be able to use AI to put together a media plan that is 30% more efficient. It's like, show me the examples of the three companies you've done that for and what the results were. And so I think in terms of, you know, it's always worth having an eye on the future and where it's going, because I think that can help you ensure that at a bigger picture level, you're heading in the right direction. But, you know, quite frankly, no CMO should really be focusing on how they build the mind twin for their company this year and how it has an enormous impact on their sales this year. By all means, focus on building a mind twin this year because of all the learnings you're going to get from it and the innovation and the pioneering, but don't do it because you think it's suddenly going to drive a 45% increase in sales for you this year. But seriously, start looking and testing and experimenting on the companies who are using AI to, you know, enhance media planning, to deliver greater amounts of personalized content at scale, to improve media buying, and look for very tangible, proven cases, not sort of hypothetical, future focused, we will be able to do this honestly.
Asking for case studies, I mean, it's also just good advice in my own job. I mean, I can't tell you how many times I've been pitched on something and I'm not buying anything. But our litmus test now for whether, you know, something is valid is, can you get me a client? Can you get me somebody to talk about what you're talking about and not just, you know, not just you saying something is great. And it's amazing how many times that that falls through, that doesn't actually happen. They don't have someone who can speak to it, and they don't have the case studies.
No, look, I mean, and it, you know, it's super easy to write a press release about, you know, something phenomenal. It's much harder to have a tangible, concrete case study, and that's why they're so important. I think the one caveat to that would be, obviously, in areas we're just talking about, for example, Mind Twins, you know, that really is about innovation. So by all means, you know, go into that in a sort of a mindset of experimentation and innovation, and knowing that actually no one's done that before, and this can be a super, you know, first for us to try. But don't do that when it comes to the day-to-day core nuts and bolts of your marketing.
And I want to talk for a sec about people and their readiness for bringing more, even more technology into their lives. So are people ready for AI-powered technology to play a bigger role in their lives, just in the way that they interact with brands? And I come to you with that question because I happened across a stat, just today, actually. There's some research from new research from Group M. They found that 96.1% of the people they spoke with have used an Amazon or an Apple connected product to help with their shopping. I mean, I don't think that that's something that people would have done as a matter of course just a few years ago. So that does speak to an openness, but then sometimes there is reticence, among some people. They feel like, you know, bringing certain devices into their home is weird, or is it listening to me, or is that just growing pains?
I honestly think if you look back over time and recent history, it's just growing pains. You know, I do think there's a serious question at the moment that, you know, we're all asking ourselves, which is in a world where, you know, we're all operating in sort of a Zoom life and human interactions are very limited. I think we are all a bit zoomed out and we're all a bit over, you know, being stuck in front of screens nonstop. And, you know, I think the impact on people's mental health of that is really tough, and it's something we're very focused on as a company, ensuring we don't neglect that. But I think if you take a step out of the sort of specific situation in which we find ourselves, you know, new technologies come along, most people dismiss them, a few people think they're interesting, lots of people say I'll never do that, and then suddenly 10 years on, you know, it's become a massively used, incredibly prevalent technology, and that's just the way the world has always worked. I think the key thing is, like, we don't need new technologies that don't add value to our lives, and I think we're all much more aware and attuned today to technology companies and, you know, how they work, how they operate, and is this overall a positive? But, you know, I am absolutely convinced that if we have a conversation in 10 years, there will be two or three things that have become, you know, the big, massively used technologies in the world that, you know, are much more advanced than where we are today and that we didn't see coming. I mean, I, for one, think it's entirely possible that the mobile phone will disappear over the next decade and that we will look back and think it was odd that we ever had to use one of our hands to carry this thing around, because, you know, the ability for glasses, and, you know, everybody has worn glasses at some point, be they sun or reading or seeing glasses. And, you know, you can go, yeah, but Google Glass was kind of terrible and crap and that never went anywhere. But I think all the early iterations of technology tend to be, you know, Apple did the Newton before they did the iPhone. You know, Palm Pilots were a huge thing at one point in time. And so I think it's easy to imagine, you know, a world where we do wear glasses, because it would be so easy to wander around. And if you imagine the future version of LinkedIn is you see someone and you're like, damn, who is that? I know them, but I don't know where. Oh, yes, I do. It pops up in my glasses. You know, running around or driving somewhere, you no longer need to be constantly looking down at, you know, your hand to see Google Maps and where you're going. You have it on display in your glasses. So I think a lot of things are going to depend on exactly how the technology plays out. And it may not be like that. It may be something else that comes along. But, you know, the very concept of wandering around outside publicly talking to a mobile phone seems like just completely normal now. Whereas the stigma of the first people who were like speaking in public on mobile phones, everyone thought it was a totally weird behavior that wouldn't catch on. Or even, you know, Steve Ballmer's famous video where he's incredibly dismissive of the iPhone and he says it doesn't have a keyboard, so it's not very good for business. And, you know, we kind of learned that that one wasn't quite true. So I think we're going to see some really, you know, amazing advances in tech, and it's going to be a very exciting decade. And hopefully we've learned from the last decade, and on every level we'll be more attuned to and more aware of the negative sides of technology.
And we've been talking about AI a lot, but you brought up AR you know, a few minutes ago. And since we're already talking about consumer adoption and new technology, let's talk a little bit about AR. So, I mean, you're obviously, you and Mr. Jones is a big believer, like you were saying, Niantic, you're an investor in Niantic and Zapper. And, you know, we've seen some interesting consumer applications for AR, like fun stuff, like what Snap does. But what's the potential for AR and marketing beyond, you know, like, I don't know, like throwing up rainbows?
Sure. So, John from Niantic, so John Hankey, the Niantic founder, basically says that, you know, he sums it up very well, is that AR delivers the potential for every single product or building in the world to be augmented through technology. And you know, that is just a huge opportunity to enhance the experience around products and buildings digitally. Now, obviously, what always happens with technology as well is, you know, people deliver the technology solution to the problem that no one had. So I'm not sure that the future is, oh my God, we can use AR to broadcast our TV commercial off our pack. It's like,
calm down. Yeah,
that's probably not going to work. But I think there are a number of use cases that, you know, do make a lot of sense, from recipes to explanations to learning about buildings and monuments. And, you know, I think you just have such a potential to build a layer of information onto physical products. And if you look at what's just happened, which I think is there's two things which I think are very positive in terms of their impact on the future of AR. You know, one is what's just happened with QR codes. So, APAC, QR codes were much bigger, but not too many people were running around using QR codes in North America and Europe. And now, like, every single restaurant, you know, the menu is now a QR code. So the world has just had a crash course in QR codes. And I think that sort of, you know, is an interesting door opener to one part of the potential. And the other one is barcodes. You know, you talked about everything the IoT company were investors in, but, you know, the new GS1 barcodes can actually trigger an AR experience. And what that means is you no longer need to print a separate code on a pack to be able to trigger an AR experience. And there's, you know, famous stories of company wanting to do something on AR, realizing that they'd missed the packaging print lead time, so they didn't put it on the pack, but instead, like, they ran a poster campaign with the code, with the Snap code on. Obviously, things like that don't tend to work that well, but I think that will make it really seamless. So we didn't invest in Niantic necessarily because we were passionate about gaming and AR gaming. We invested in Niantic because we believed in the enormous potential, for the company that could be the AR map of the world. And the precision that is starting to happen with AR is also important because if you're looking at something in front of you, the angle doesn't matter so much, whereas where you start looking into the distance, you know, a 5-degree angle can suddenly mean that you're looking at something completely different. So there's a lot of detail and precision around AR needed in terms of, you know, fulfilling its potential as a technology. But I think, you know, that journey is really exciting. And that whole thing is called point cloud, is that precision and accuracy.
I remember when I ate out for the first time after some of the restrictions were lifted over the summer in New York, I did not know how to scan a QR code. I felt like such an idiot. I mean, the waiter had to show me how to do it. I had no idea. I'd never scanned one in my life.
No, and now I do it all the time. No, exactly. And I think that's the thing, you know, behavior, if the thing you're changing your behavior to do is worth it, behavior change is really easy. You know, we can all adopt things very quickly if we see big benefits from it. But again, I would come back to if you're a CMO sitting in 2021, many of these things are kind of exciting for the future, but, you know, focus on the technology that is going to deliver tangible, concrete results to your business this year.
And lastly, do you think that agencies are equipped to help brands and businesses manage all of this change that's coming and to really take advantage of it and do interesting stuff and useful stuff with these new technologies? Are they going to be good shepherds for this?
No. I mean, I think, you know, the agency world is just now a business in structural decline. And I think they were all pretty disingenuous in the way they talked about, you know, their 2020 numbers, because they all said, oh, you know, business is terrible because of COVID. And that's not actually true. I think what we all saw in 2020 is if you were a digital and tech business, you know, COVID accelerated the disruption and your businesses grew very strongly. But if you're only digital and tech in a press release, you know, you couldn't hide behind that. And so in reality, what they should have been saying is, our businesses did poorly in 2020 because we're an old-fashioned analog business and we're not tech or digital. Because if they had been, they'd have had a very strong and successful performance. And I think, unfortunately, you know, they're kind of in the middle of their Kodak moment, and it isn't going to get any better. And I think the challenge that comes with that is that nobody who is any good in technology wants to join any of those companies. You know, why would you? I mean, if you're a brilliant basketball player, you want to play in the NBA, you don't want to go and play in the third division in Poland. You know, one of our founders, Andy Morrow, was very funny at a Cannes panel. I think someone from one of the big holding companies was holding forth about AI. And Andy just went like, how many PhDs do you have? And you saw the person sort of, because the answer was like maybe two. And Andy was like, well, if you don't have 50, you know, don't talk about doing AI.
So I'm gonna bring us home, and I'm just gonna say that we should probably do this podcast again, since we've been making a lot of predictions. In whatever,
I thought you were going to say because it hadn't, the technology hadn't worked. I'm like, no.
No, we recorded successfully. I think that next time, next time, I think my mind twin is just going to interview your mind twin. What do you think?
We can do that one. It would be really interesting. It's funny. I've seen a couple of people interact with my mind twin and ask about the company, and you see the responses, and it's kind of quite weird watching yourself answer questions that people ask. But no, look, I think I can't remember who it was who said, Bran Faron, I think the head of Imagineering at Disney at a time, he said, it's easy to predict technology, it's hard to predict human behavior. And one of the great examples that he would use was, you know, video recorders, where Betamax was a dramatically better quality than VCR, but VCR ended, and Betamax remained the industry standard, but VCR won out. So I think it's really hard to predict technology. The one thing that I think is certain is, you know, a decade from now, there are going to be some amazing new things that are, you know, a core part of our everyday lives. You know, we believe that they will be in the areas of AI, of AR, even facial recognition. You know, again, there's some scary downsides to that, but the, you know, the ability just to walk out into the street and go shopping with your face, which we're already starting to see happen in China. They're a long way advanced versus where we are. So the certainty is it's going to be an exciting decade.
So just as a sidebar, just a tiny silly story, you know, thinking of, oh, like maybe some of the scary things. So whenever my boyfriend or I ask Siri to do anything, we always make sure to say thank you. So that when the robot revolution happens, we want them to remember that we were polite.
Exactly.
We did not demand anything.
Exactly. When they're running the world. No, I'm not so scared of the robots running the world. I'm more scared of some of the individuals who have been running the world. But fortunately,
humans are scary enough.
That's all played out in the right way so far.
Well, David, thanks for sharing all your wisdom.
Look, a pleasure. It was great. And look forward to talking again either soon or in another 10 years.
My mind twin will send its regards.
Take care.
AdExchanger's Industry Preview podcast series is brought to you by IBM Watson Advertising. AI can help us usher in a new and better way forward for this industry. IBM Watson Advertising brings AI at scale to the advertising industry through a suite of cookie and identifier-free solutions that help brands reach consumers in privacy-forward ways. Learn more at ibm.com/watson-advertising.